I'm Josh Scherer.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They have this panther sound effect that is just the cheesiest, stupidest sounding thing. Big voice guy going, panther goal scored by Sam Reinhart.
Where'd you get that thing?
I trapped it. Been keeping it in my bathroom at the motel, feeding it old pizza.
It's Mike Shope.
If you're calm, that wondrous big cat will be calm too. But if you're scared, that beautiful death machine will do what God made it to do, namely, eat you with a smile on its face.
And the Bulldog. On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Well, we begged for it. We couldn't wait any longer. And the cuts are in, and there's really nothing you didn't know already or wouldn't have guessed. The news here is that Max Hairston went to IR, designated for return, so he'll miss the first four games, and there's no actionable anything here on Trey White. Like he was not. You have two. Sal's the one who should explain this, and we'll try to get him in a minute here, but I think you only have the two spots for IR guys that can come back. You want to put a third guy on IR, it's somebody that would miss the year, I believe. And they went with Tylan Grable and Hairston for those two spots. So no real update here within this on White, except that he wasn't placed on IR, which is good. You know, that injury might have looked like it could have been Achilles or it could have been severe. Doesn't sound like from this anyway. That's the case. So that's good. Most of the names you'd know from the cuts are names we've talked about and already had reported that they wouldn't be making the team. Frank Gore Jr. was released. Maybe that one wasn't out. Zach Davidson, another one. Here's Sal with us here on the Westher Hotline. Sal, you've seen the list. What's most interesting to add to our previous conversation? I think I'd start with Hairston.
Yeah, for sure. Not a surprise to me. I've been saying that I think Max Hairston would start on IR. It just made sense, right? I mean, like, he is probably a little ways away. That's Sean McDermott's words from last week. So he's a little ways away. So it made sense that he would start on IR. Then you don't have to put him on the 53-man roster. I think more interesting to me was the fact they put Tylan Grable on IR to return, and Cedric Van Pran Granger did not start on PUP. So I went back and I looked. I believe that was the only thing that I missed on. Everything else I had for projected 53 is exactly what it was, except for that particular change, which is I had Cedric Van Pran Granger starting on PUP, Tylan Grable on the roster, but instead it's going to be Van Pran Granger on the roster, Tylan Grable on IR. Otherwise, no surprises from me. I don't think, Mike, I'm looking at it right now, I don't think there's anything there that I would be surprised by. But if you want to talk about the name, sure, you know, Max Hairston, and the interesting move there, for sure, not a surprise, but it just means that, well, how about this? I think this is part of it that's interesting. This means Tre'Davious White should be good to go in some way, shape, or form, right? Yeah. I think that's what becomes interesting about that move.
Yeah, right. And I just mentioned that as well, that there's nothing about him here, and he's not on this IR for return. So he's, you know, he might miss, we don't know, he might miss a game or two, but right. He doesn't have to miss four. And Hairston, this also is obvious. Just we've been talking about this since he went down. Like this is important time, and now his career waits until at least week five. Coming off the injury as a rookie with very little camp work in, you know, he might, I don't want to say he'll lose the year or anything like that, but it might be a while before he can really help them.
Yeah, I agree, and it reminds me a bit of Cole Bishop last year. And of course, Cole Bishop didn't start an IR or anything like that, but Cole Bishop was a guy who missed all that training camp time last year and preseason. And by the time that he was, you know, kind of ready to play, he was already way behind on reps. And I think that's the case here at Max Hairston. So, you know, you hope that he can just get back in the mix a little bit here after 4 weeks. So the way it's going to work with Max Harrison, and by the way, with both Michael Hoyt and Larry Ogunjobi, because they are on the reserve suspended list, all of these guys, they're all going to be out for four games minimum, and then they can begin practicing with the team after four games. And now in Harrison's case, the team doesn't have to do that. They can wait as long as they want on IR when he's ready. Hoyt and Ogunjobi will basically, that will happen after four games. And then they can start practicing, and then they have two more games they have to sit. Harrison's case, he doesn't. Once four games are up, they can begin practicing him at any time, and they can activate him at any time after that.
A couple of players that we did talk about earlier, but now we have the official list here. Tyrell Shavers is not on it, so he is on the roster. I'm looking at a list of the players who were released. And that doesn't come as a surprise to you. I know I asked you this earlier, but fans are probably wondering, well, what will this mean? Did Shavers do enough to be relevant, like going into the Baltimore game? What are we looking at, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think he's probably going to be a guy that plays more mainly special teams, excuse me, and you know, maybe gets a few breadcrumbs on offense here or there. It's hard for me to see, short of injury, him really being on the field very much. This is probably a situation where if you have Curtis Samuel or Elijah Moore, or more Samuel, I guess, if he's not, you know, fully healthy and he's not completely participating or not super comfortable there, then you're probably looking at, you know, Tyrell Shavers eating up some snaps there. But I just think that you have to also remember the pass catchers. It's not just the receivers, as we know, Mike, right? It's Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox. You know, the guys out of the backfield, there's just how many footballs to go around. There's not a lot. And how many snaps there, depending on how you want to divvy that up. You know, you're relying on those guys to catch passes too. So different alignments, different personnel. I just don't see there's a pathway for him to be playing a ton of snaps right away. But, you know, when he's been out there, he's made plays, and I wouldn't expect anything different when he is out there to, you know, catch the ball, make a couple of plays, and, you know, we might be sitting here after a few weeks going, okay, get the guy on the field a little bit more because he makes plays out there.
Right. Chenault and even Hamler. So we're in, back in Brandon Codrington, right? Punts and kickoffs?
Yeah, I would say Brandon Codrington, clearly the number one punt returner and the main punt returner. You could even say lone, I guess, in this case, but obviously you have Khalil Shakir who could do it if you needed him to. That's obviously development, too. That's really, you know, encouraging, just to bring that up, which Khalil Shakir has not practiced in a while. He hasn't played in a while, but obviously with him, you know, being on the 53-man roster, that's encouraging for him. You could put him back there if you needed him to, but you also have, you know, guys on kickoffs. Brandon Codrington would be doing kickoffs with probably, I'd say, Ty Johnson and Ray Davis would be the most likely to join him there. And, you know, not a surprise there. We talked about Chenault a little bit, so you're probably looking at your two returners as Codrington and one of the kickers, and then Codrington is your main punt returner.
You know, some of the predicting for the roster was that there might be Curtis Samuel versus Elijah Moore. Maybe Samuel could have been a trade candidate, and maybe he was right to be considered that, but he wasn't traded, and they're both on the team. Is it, if you think back to maybe not the last time you did a 53-man, you know, prediction, but going back earlier into the summer, would it have surprised you that they'd both survive?
No, it didn't, but it always was something in the back of your head where you're thinking, okay, is there room for both of them? Think about their two skill sets, what they want. But, you know, to me, once they signed Elijah Moore, I figured, you know, especially given some guaranteed money, he was probably earmarked to make the team. And you kind of knew that already with Curtis Samuel, to be quite honest. So, I think now it becomes, where do they fit in the offense? What are their roles in the offense? Can you put them on the field at the same time? How does all that work? I think for me, it's more about that than it is necessarily on the team. It's more about on the offense and how it all works together.
Mm-hmm. Jordan Phillips is on the list of players released, but he's headed to the practice squad, and probably so are a good many of these other guys, or a few.
Yeah, for sure. So you're going to get 16 guys on the practice squad, actually 17 with an international player. That would be Travis Clayton. So, you know, if they choose to keep Travis Clayton on the practice squad, they'll get 17 practice squad players. Jordan Phillips would be one of them. As I reported yesterday, you know, he went to the he was signed to the 90-man roster. He was released. He's going to go on the practice squad. And what does that mean? Does that mean that he's going to be elevated for the game against the Baltimore Ravens? It's very possible. Is that why they did it? Are they looking at basically him, you know, having a role in that game? And that's specifically why they signed him. I am curious about that. Or is it simply, hey, we want a veteran defensive tackle? You know, a couple of things, a couple of developments today too, where there has been a lot of talk about, would the Bills release Larry Ogunjobi? He has guaranteed money. We have some money, I should say, where you could save some money. They didn't. They put him on the suspended list where he moved over there. They didn't release him, him and Michael Hoyt, as we know. So, but I would put this out there that because Larry Ogunjobi is a veteran defensive tackle who they're not going to have on their team for 6 weeks, that at least four practicing, maybe Jordan Phillips is simply the replacement for him numbers-wise to have a guy on the practice squad that's a veteran that if you have to call upon, you have because you don't have Larry Ogunjobi.
Mm-hmm. Zach Davidson, you're not surprised he was released. Are you disappointed?
Yeah, I'm disappointed for him. I mean, anytime you see a guy, like, I guess in that regard, he's been on the team for a few years. People forget Zach Davidson's been around several years now with the Bills. Was started his career with the Minnesota Vikings. I think, you know, there's the punt was incredible, obviously, and yes. I heard people saying, like, oh, my God, keep him as a punter. Well, there's a lot more that goes into punting. There's just booting one punt, which was great for him. But there's, you know, you have to work with the special teams unit and know the game plan and who you're going against and where you want to punt it. He's a tight end. That's what he does. You know, if he wants to try his hand at being strictly more of a punter in the NFL, then, you know, good on him. But I think that he is a valuable practice squad piece at tight end because I think he's kind of a Dalton Kincaid replacement if something were to happen to him. You know, you have three different really styles of tight end here, Mike, for the Bills. You have Dalton Kincaid, who's really more the pure pass catcher. You have Jackson Hawes, who's really just a pure blocker. And then you have Dawson Knox, who's in the middle. So, you know, you put Zach Davidson on the roster, on the practice squad. If something's to happen to Dalton Kincaid, I think that's your replacement there.
I have to ask, why was he punting Saturday?
Because Brad Robbins was sick. They didn't want Brad Robbins to have to do too much. He got sick, and he made the trip. They said, he's going to hold, but he's not going to punt. They didn't want to put that much on him while he was sick. And so he was sick, so he didn't punt, but he held. And on top of that, it gave them a chance, like they did with Ray Davis, to have a guy that they could put out there and say, hey, do we have a guy in a pinch here? We know he could do it. Let's put him out there and make sure that we're good there.
Just one or two more quickly here, Sal. Dane Jackson being released, do you think he's practice squad bound or is it over?
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
I would think he'd be on the practice squad, especially considering, you know, Max Harrison is on IR and Tre'Davious White is dealing with some sort of injury. I mean, it would just make sense. But if not, I would really expect them to bring in another corner on the practice squad with a little of experience. If it's not Dane Jackson, it's probably someone else, to be quite honest with you, because I think they need that. I mean, you could go with Jamarcus Ingram. That's fine. And maybe that's what winds up happening here. And, you know, he's going to have a role, obviously, Jamarcus Ingram. But I said, Mike, last week while you're out, I said, to me, it was all or nothing with Dane Jackson. It all depended on Tre'Davious White's injury. If Tre'Davious White was hurt and he was going to miss some time, I think not only Dane Jackson would make the team, I think he actually would start week one against the Ravens. But if Tre'Davious White's okay, I think Dane Jackson's off the team and then maybe on the practice squad, and then you can elevate him.
Okay. And backup quarterback, just your thoughts on Trubisky here. Did White just not do enough?
Yeah, that's right. I think that by the time we got to the end of camp, Mike, I think everybody kind of saw that it was Trubisky and not White. What's interesting to me, though, is who's going to be the practice squad quarterback? Is it White or is it Shane Buechele? Maybe you guys have seen something on that. I have not seen any reporting specifically on that, but that's pretty much what we're probably monitoring now is, you know, who's going to be the practice squad quarterback.
All right. Thanks, Sal, for coming back on.
Okay, you got it, man. Thanks.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. The Bills announced their 53-man roster. Well, we'll have to figure out what is fair to expect from Hairston. I mean, the Bills needed a corner in that draft more than anything else. There's the requisite, you know, allotment of interior defensive linemen, and, you know, that's where they defense is where they put most of their, you know, draft capital, of course. But as we talked about a lot before the draft, you know, thinking about Sal coming on all the time, and that position was the one where they didn't have a clear starter. I mean, Trey White, kind of a, you're hoping that he reverts to form and maybe you get away with it, but you're still drafting Hairston. And if he doesn't win the job right away than he's going to eventually, or else you have a problem. And now their problem is, and this is without even considering whether White is hurt, is that, like I said with Sal, it's not just, it's at least 4 weeks where he's out. And again, not surprising based on how everybody's been talking, but still. So you're to week five, and does he just get right on the field? I think that's probably a ramp up. It's a rookie who's had very little practice time in the league. So, I mean, no doubt a good athlete, somebody with instincts and enough to be a first-round pick. But I wonder just what kind of hole they're in there. You know? I mean, I don't say this in a negative way. The Bills have gotten away with a lot. I mean, they have been able to withstand injuries and, you know, retirements, guys aging out, Hyde, Poyer, change, you know, in a nicer sense, change on their defense for years. And this is really where McDermott makes his money. This is where he comes through, is making it work at a pretty high level usually. Last year it fell off a little bit with these changes. I wonder what he thinks right now of where they're at in the secondary. He doesn't have Hairston for a month. He doesn't have his first-round pick. Whatever he's got with White, injured or not, would be interesting to know, like, for real, what he thinks of White's quality at this point. And then Bishop, too. I mean, that was our conversation a week ago. Right out of the Bears game was McDermott's comments about not knowing really what he's got at safety. I mean, I think any team can reach a point where, you know, it starts to fall off. And it's just like kind of a situation where we haven't had much of this with them since this all took off. And it took off with McDermott and eventually Allen, but with Hyde and Poyer defensively as your cogs. And like we've talked about recently with this all in mind, nobody listening now needs to be told just what their value was. We knew that. But it still doesn't quite get the attention maybe it deserves. Just the attention in the sense of just how important it was for the Bills to have those two guys. I mean, just you had everything. You had reliability, right? That's big. They're both super durable. They almost never missed plays for years. So you've got, that's perfect. Never hurt, really. I mean, eventually, but always on the field. Always knew where to be. Always knew where each other was and how they played off each other. And then you also got plays, not just two guys that wouldn't get you beat, but you also got big plays from each of them. I mean, that's just like A++. And both are gone, so there has to be transition. That's life. That's football. Questionable at safety. Questionable at one corner. I'm not going to bring Benford into this because I think he's fine. He's excellent. And I think Rapp is good enough. He's good enough for our not to be, you know, scrutinizing him all the time necessarily. But we'll see what happens, you know, next time around here. Well, we don't know. But they're tested at least at defensive back. And eventually, maybe tomorrow, I don't know what the schedule is. It's kind of a weird time with there being no preseason, no game this week. So there'll probably be some days off in here before everything gets real next week. I mean, what happens usually by as you get to week one, Tuesday is the normal off day. Wednesday's media day. Maybe we'll have that tomorrow. I didn't think to ask Sal. But eventually we'll get some sort of news on Trey White. All right, there you go. A lot of these guys will be around on the practice squad and still be able to be talked about. Frank Gore Jr. Three running backs. I mean, it's three running backs. It's not, you know, they didn't. That's still interesting to me. I'm thinking back to before the draft when Cook's status was more in question, whether or not they would draft somebody, because everybody loved this year for running backs. Remember Bulldog saying he didn't think they would unless they thought they were in bad with Cook. If they thought he was going to be a real problem, like to stay away. then they would draft somebody. And if they didn't think that, then they wouldn't. And he was right. They didn't draft a running back at all. There were so many exciting prospects. Yeah, I guess these hold-ins work. Worked for Cook. Worked for Terry McLaurin. Even Hendrickson, he got a $14 million raise. That's an interesting one. McLaurin first. So the consensus on him seemed to be, okay, come on, though. All right, you're trying to capitalize on your big year. That's what Cook did. That's what players will do. Last year of a deal. And he had a lot of leverage, McLaurin, on a team that out of nowhere went far. They went to the NFC Championship. He's the number one receiver on a Jaden Daniels team. What are you going to do, Washington? So he had them. And they didn't have to pay him, but they eventually did. That this is right when these things break. Right at the end of the preseason. Post-camp, post-preseason, he had that with McLaurin and Hendrickson in a span of one day. But he got top 10 receiver money, and kind of nobody thought he was that good. Good enough to deserve that. But he had him. And he won. So for all the energy that some fans spend on how it's, you know, you've got a contract, you should honor it, sort of how our lives tend to work. In pro sports, it doesn't always have to go like that. And McLaurin ends up, I mean, 3 for 96. It's crazy. And he's old for a receiver. He's not old for like a person. So he won easily. He won huge with Washington. And Hendrickson, that's different. They just added $14 million to his number for this season and left it at that. And he agreed. So he'll be up after this season, unless something else happens. They didn't give him a new contract beyond this year. They just added to his pay this year. $14 million, a pretty good little bump. But he, you know, he's driving to Florida. He comes back. Pretty, you know, wasn't he a little bit vocal too? Like, you know, it's just part of the whole deal, I guess. Say what you need to say. And, you know, he did all right. He'll be on the field for Cincinnati week one, you'd have to think. Same with McLaurin and Washington. So you can go ahead and draft Terry McLaurin, by the way. I guess that's safe to do now. It always was. What was going to happen? They had to do it. And, of course, Cook got settled a couple of weeks ago now, so nothing to worry about there. McLaurin is not my favorite fantasy pick because it's touchdown regression, likely, like we talk about with Cook a lot. And there are so many receivers who go right around where he goes that you can pick Terry McLaurin, but you can also pick, I mean, it's almost 10 other guys from Evans and McMillan in Carolina and Waddle and Olave, who's a little bit later, and Odunze in Chicago, and Igbuka in Tampa now has moved up to this range, and Zay Flowers and Devontae Smith. They're all like picks 35 to 50, kind of. And McLaurin is right in there. So if you love him or you want to draft Daniels, you know, you can justify it more that way. But I doubt you get the same big, maybe you do. I mean, he's still good. And you have Daniels in Washington, but I doubt you get the same touchdown. I just always would bet against that when it spikes like it did for Cook or for McLaurin. 803-0550 if you want to talk about the roster, the season, any of it. I'm here for it until 7. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
He's loaded, but it's weird. Like, you look at him, you're like, oh, he's just going to be straight power. But the way he gets off the ball and he can get his hips through, and like he turns into like almost, I don't know how to say it, but like a little ballerina almost. And like the way he's able to move his body around, it doesn't make sense how big he is. He's able to move like that.
Yeah.
And so like he's able to quickly get upfield and does a great job in the run game, like swimming past people or just, you know how you do like arm over, like if you're getting beat on outside zone, you arm over and pull him up the field.
Right.
He does that on defense and it's great to see that. Like he watches us and does our moves against us too.
Connor McGovern with Eric Wood talking about defensive lineman Deion Walker on Eric's podcast. Mike Shope here with you until 7. Bulldog is off this week. 803-0550 is the number. Just discovering a few seconds ago who Graham Mertz is. Didn't know that one. Graham Mertz. Sixth round pick by the Texans this year. Quarterback played at Wisconsin and Florida. You can do that now. I was watching a plentiful amount of Stanford versus Hawaii on Saturday. That was one. I mentioned how I went to Louisville for drafts, and I had one at 10:30 in the morning and another at 11 at night. From like 7 o'clock on, I felt like I was staying awake because I had a flight or something, one of those where you can't really just fall, you don't want to fall asleep. I don't want to, you know, miss my flight, but you're just like sitting there. Well, this is me anyway, not productive. I was in a hotel room anyway. It wasn't like I could have been cleaning my house or whatever, but just sitting there waiting, and that was what was on. Stanford, Hawaii. And the Stanford quarterback started at Oregon State, and maybe his first game was a win over Stanford. So now he's at Stanford. And a guy from Hawaii who scored a touchdown had been on Stanford. So now he's on Hawaii, and I'm so bright that when Hawaii took the lead, I'm like, this is Hawaii. Stanford has been 3-9 3 years in a row, I believe. But still, like, this is Hawaii. Let's just go bet. I'm at a casino. It's in the air. Let's just go bet Stanford. And they take the lead and then lose. Frank Reich is the Stanford coach. And I guess he's doing that for 1 year. Andrew Luck, who college football teams have general managers now, he hired Reich, who was his last coach with the Colts, to take over that program, I guess, in the short term. Graham Mertz, anyway, this was about him. I'm taking his moment away from him, that the Texans kept three quarterbacks, C.J. Stroud, Davis Mills, and this Graham Mertz. The Bills kept two. Allen, right, and Mitch Trubisky. That's what they did.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett & Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Yeah, that was a long day. I probably should have done the thing I said I was going to do, which is like drive into Louisville and see Louisville instead of just sit in that room and then occasionally, you know, pop down to play blackjack or something. I saw one, I hate to say it, and I escaped, but I saw one of the all-time, would I say a cooler stretch in blackjack where like the dealer can't miss. That is tough to watch. I sort of pulled back on my betting and got a couple of lucky cards, then got out of there before it got too rough. But just one of those where, you know, you've been there. You have your friends with you and everybody's sitting down at the table, getting into it. And the dealer just could not miss. And one guy was dropping $350 a hand and just getting buried by this dealer. Like, just, wow. And, you know, here comes the dealer with his fancy 6-8-2-5 combo. You got to love that. 6, we got him. 8, oh, we got him. 2, whoo, we got 5. 21, uh-oh, wait a minute, that's bad. And then the guy who was, I mean, I don't know why I need to tell you all this. I guess I don't. The guy who was putting... Literally, I mean, we had time to count because he would lose and then he would just reach into his pocket for more money. And that would like stop the game. And a couple other guys were losing and doing the same thing. So, you know, you'd sort of take a peek over how many chips are in that little circle right there. Oh, $350. And just dealer, bam, 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 bam. Brutal. Anyway, we've got the Bills roster. We talked about that. We've also got from Bet Online, always love this stuff. What do we call these? Exact division order odds. That's what they call them. Let's go with that. The exact order of finish in the AFC East. Can you guess what the favorite combination would be? Bills, of course, one. Then it goes New England, Miami, Jets. That pays plus 280. So the chalk, that's almost just like betting. No, actually it isn't. I was going to say betting the Bills alone, but that's like minus 250, not plus. That exact order is the considered likeliest to happen. Bills, Patriots, Dolphins, Jets. The second favorite is just flip the Jets and Dolphins and move Miami to last. Keep New England second. They like New England that much. Then it would be flipping Miami and New England. So the dare I say it, the shortest odds on any AFC East combo where the Bills are not in first, New England, Buffalo, Miami, Jets. Like 10-1 in that kind of range. I think you could play around with this one after the Bills. Or even, I mean, you could, I guess, make an argument for New England. That would pay. I want it to pay pretty good. If I'm going to do this, I want to really hit. And so you'd either have to bet against the Bills winning or get a little creative with the rest of it, which would be, I think, moving the Jets up to second and then doing, you know, either New England or Miami. Those are pretty close to the same odds. That's plus 850, Bills, Jets, Patriots, Dolphins. How about in the NFC East? Exact order of finish. Nobody wins the NFC East 2 years in a row. It has not happened in 21 years. I don't think that matters. Does it matter? Why would it matter? I mean, Philadelphia has really established itself as a powerhouse, I think. And maybe a lot of these other years, I mean, I guess I could think back to like the Washington team with Robert Griffin, or the Giants with Eli, maybe, like just not consistently great. I don't know what Dallas would be here. Dallas had a lot of good teams with Romo and then Prescott, but never back-to-back division titles in those years. Philadelphia won, Washington, Dallas, Giants. I think that's probably the same as last year, right? That's the favorite order of finish in the NFC East. I mentioned very early today how it sounds to me that everybody thinks Miami will be terrible, and everybody also thinks New England will be good. That New England schedule, you really just have to see or hear it to believe. It just, how many games do they lose in the first, what ADP chasing, I brought this up this morning. You can watch that on YouTube. You can watch this on YouTube. And why wouldn't you? The first 13 games, it's a 17-game season. Here are the Patriots' first 13 games. Raiders at home, at Miami, Steelers at home, Carolina at home, here, at New Orleans, at Tennessee, Browns at home, Atlanta at home, at Tampa, Jets at home, Cincinnati away, then the Giants at home. If they're good, like legit good, that's 9-4. Bye week, they have a late bye week, the Patriots, then it's Bills, Ravens, Jets, Dolphins. The Patriots to make the playoffs is a bet I'm going to make. And even though I'm in New York, I can do that. They did have, very exciting, I even had to tell Sam Paniadovich immediately, I couldn't wait to tell him, that they have awards betting in Indiana. That's where I was. It's the Kentucky Fantasy Football State Championships that are held in Indiana. You know, it's close to Kentucky. For some reason, they do that. But I checked, and there it is. MVP, Offensive Player of the Year. I placed two bets. The one that I had been thinking about and talking to Sam about when he was in Las Vegas, and he couldn't place it. I couldn't place it because I'm in New York. He couldn't place it on his phone unless he'd done it at the window or something if they had it, but didn't happen. The Offensive Player of the Year, I told you I like my long shots. This is certainly that. George Kittle. That's nuts, right? How will George Kittle win Offensive Player of the Year? This is how. The league continues down the path of taking away deep balls. It becomes harder for the likes of Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson to put up massive seasons, massive games. I mean, look, I'm already in tough here because they're so good that it's probably not realistic to think Jamar Chase will, like, bomb or something. But I think maybe we get a little lucky and no receiver just dominates. There's been a lot of that. We had it with Chase last year. He won all the stats. We had it with Tyreek Hill a year or two before that, when he was up near 2,000 yards, where you had receivers that were, like, obvious for the award. So we have to duck that. You know, we can't have running backs going for 2,000 yards again either. There's a lot that has to go right here. Really, it's just, I mean, I'm coming at this from the wrong direction. It's really just, here you have Kittle, who is, like, your favorite football player's favorite football player is George Kittle. Like, best overall player in the league kind of guy here. You think New England's schedule is easy. San Francisco is even better, easier than that. And think about the change the Niners have undergone here. They still have McCaffrey, and that, you know, will be in the way because he's great. If he's healthy, that's a problem. But Debo is gone. Ayuk is hurt and is likely to miss six games. Then who knows what? Juwan Jennings is maybe hurt. He's not practicing. He wants a new deal. I don't know what that is. Ricky Pearsall was a first-round pick last year that didn't do much to show he has to be really good. Even if he is, Kittle should be in position to, you know, maybe get more targets. And when he gets targets, he has huge games. There are games when they just use him to block, and I think Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco thinks that's hilarious. Just, you know, we can do anything we want. We can get anybody open, and anybody we want at running back will just run through huge holes. It's an easy game. I think he might need Kittle. I love drafting him. A lot of people do. He might need Kittle more in the passing game, and I don't know if I'm right, and he stays healthy, maybe you get sort of a record-setting tight end season, and that will have people talking. And that award is kind of off. So is the MVP, kind of sometimes maybe seen as a stats award. And voters would love to vote for George Kittle because they want to be able to tell you how much they respect and appreciate his being a more complete player. And then we'll be talking about how good he is in that way, and we'll just push him right up to the top of the list. There it is. Does that sound like, you know, 150-1? Does that sound like that's worth $20 to win $3,000? I decided that I thought it was. A lot has to go right, but man, what a story it would make. There'd be two people that'd be very excited, me and George Kittle, if that were to actually happen. Time out here, and we'll talk some more. 803-0550 if you want to get in under the wire. The Bills roster was made official about 45 minutes ago. No real surprises. Sal has been saying it. He tried to predict the 53, just missed on one guy. And the newsiest piece of it is that Maxwell Hairston goes to IR, that special IR where you can come back after at least four games. So doesn't seem that the Bills are worried about him long term, but it's a really tough result for their first round pick to have to miss any of this. And it's going to be at least until week five when we see him. This is Mike Shope. I'll be right back. Thanks for listening to WGR. Welcome back. Tomorrow, Steve Palazzolo, longtime PFF analyst, now with the 33rd team. Check the mic with Sam Monson, one of my favorite podcasts that's not fantasy driven. Just two guys talking football and both really good at it. Steve, as you may know from just knowing his career or his chats with us over the years, is a former minor league pitcher. He's also super tall. So I like to bring up baseball with him. He probably gets tired of it. I don't know. But I do like knowing that he's going to be on tomorrow. I took 10 days off earlier this month, and I remember coming back and feeling like I was gone 5 minutes. It just did not work as a break exactly. I mean, I don't know. A lot of it I was home for. So it wasn't exactly like coming back from Alaska. And this weekend, driving to Louisville and back, that felt like 10 days. I had the opposite effect. I don't know. Today, I got here and like, all right, I got a lot to say, and I really only missed the two shows, Friday and Monday. I mentioned going there and betting on George Kittle to win Offensive Player of the Year. I didn't mention the other bet. I said I made two, and this is kind of funny. I think I was driving home yesterday, and it's only like maybe 15, 20 minutes in Indiana before you cross one of their many beautiful bridges into Louisville and be in Kentucky. And about 5 minutes away from that bridge, I remembered about the awards betting. Like, oh, too bad I forgot to do that back at the hotel. Like, no, I can just pull over right now. So I did. Like, I'm kind of a two-lane, almost like a highway. And I'm just like, I want to do this one more thing. I'm with Sneaky Joe on it, and that's Prescott for the MVP. Because I think there could be huge numbers there, and it's like 30-1 maybe was that one. And, I mean, he finished second. The year Allen got the one first-place vote when Jackson won, Allen actually finished fifth in that voting, but Aaron Schatz voted him first. And that was kind of the story, that Jackson otherwise would have been a unanimous winner for the second time. But that didn't happen. Still, Prescott came in second. I think Brock Purdy was three or four, and then someone else. But Allen was fifth that year. So Prescott's been that close. And I don't know. I don't know that, I mean, voters, I don't know that people really love him as a player. I think he's underrated. And I don't know if I'm right about that or why that would be, but he has his critics. And maybe that gets in my way here, the idea that he could win it. Came close before with Pickens added on. They should throw the ball constantly this year, Dallas, especially if no Micah Parsons, and who knows how that will be resolved. Okay, that'll do it for me, or am I here another hour? I'm good, okay. Tomorrow, Steve Palazzolo. Hope you'll join me at 3 o'clock. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.